This is CNT Talk. Every week, two friends debate the issues of the ages as we agree to disagree. It's never politically correct, but it's always entertaining. Join us tonight so you can sound knowledgeable at work tomorrow. We're smacking you upside the head with the hammer of truth. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello. Welcome to our show this evening. I was going to talk about all sports this week, but then other things came
up. You were?
I wanted to.
You didn't tell me that.
I know, because I couldn't do that with some of the things going on.
Well, maybe we can interject a few sports at the end.
We will. We will. We'll do that because you got to have some sports in life. It's how life works. So tomorrow, James Comey is going to talk in front of Congress. And it's interesting because he released his pre-prepared speech today, which I think is odd. Does that strike you as odd right now that he asked the Senate subcommittee to release
the
guidelines?
Know. Comey's kind of a weird dude. I guess he's doing it like full transparency. Here's what I'm going to say.
I want to play a clip from CNN, and then I want to go over some things that's highlighted in this pre-prepared thing. Whether or not this is what he actually says tomorrow or not, I don't know yet. We'll have to wait and see. But let me play this clip for you.
Jim Comey's 9 one-on-one interactions with President Trump to the last, less than a month before his firing, testimony that lays out a story of loyalty pledges, potentially damning requests, and a president infuriated by the FBI director's refusal to say publicly he wasn't under investigation.
During a phone call, he said it, and then during another phone call, he said it. So he said it once at dinner, and then he said it twice during phone calls.
Did you call him?
In one case, I called him. In one case, he called me.
And did you ask, am I under investigation?
I actually asked him,
Lester Holt.
I said, if it's possible, would you let me know, am I under investigation? He said, you are not under investigation.
So that Trump has said that. That was Lester Holt that he said, I was not under investigation. The open remarks.
I love that intro. Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
And by the way, what is the most important? Now, we're going to talk about different aspects of this.
Yes.
But what is the most important thing that clip, that Trump says in that clip, does Comey deny or affirm what Trump just said?
Affirm, sir.
Affirm. Meaning Trump is not under investigation and has not been under investigation. Now, you would think that might be the lead portion of the testimony, since the entire Russian collusion depends on, part of it is, oh, they're investigating Trump. And Trump says he's not under investigation. Comey agrees. But no, what is the lead in? What we saw was loyalty oaths. What do you say?
Yes.
And damning. What was the rest of it?
Get rid of Flynn. Please drop this investigation of Flynn. Flynn. Now, I want to preface some of this. This is Comey's version.
Of course.
These were one-on-one. And he says, I have no way to corroborate this because it was one-on-one, but I kept detailed notes of what you thought was said. Now, did Trump say those things? I can probably see him saying, hey, be loyal, don't mess me up, don't do this. Yeah.
I'm not questioning that Trump may have said, you know, a la Michael Corleone, you know, I need your loyalty, Fredo. You broke my heart, Fredo. You broke my heart.
You're killing
him. So we can have a separate discussion.
Well, let's have that. So do you think Trump said that to Comey?
Yeah, probably.
Do you think it's appropriate?
No, I don't think it's appropriate.
I agree with that.
So I don't think a president should be telling the head of the FBI, I need your loyalty. Because really what he needs is, no, I need you to be honest. I need you to faithfully uphold the law. I need you to investigate and do your job impartially. You know, that's what I need from you.
Right.
These sort of, yeah, so I get it. No, you shouldn't say that. However, does that mean that it is criminal? No. Does that mean, and by the way, there is a very specific and precise definition of obstruction of justice. Does that mean it's obstruction of justice?
No.
No. And the other very important point about this whole obstruction of justice claim, James Comey is the director of the FBI. If a president, and if he believed that a president was telling him, I would like you to obstruct justice, what does that FBI director have to do, Chad?
Police has to go to the Attorney General.
He has to go to the Attorney General.
Which he claims he did.
Not to claim that his investigation was obstructed.
Right, exactly. That's the part they missed.
He has to perhaps resign.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the idea that the FBI director, who kept detailed notes, didn't understand that the president was trying to obstruct his investigation is laughable. And Comey is not making that claim.
Right.
And this, of course, piggybacks onto the testimony of the now acting FBI director. Well, Trump has just nominated the new guy. Who was the other guy? Is it McCabe or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Or not McCabe, but somebody else. But in
former
any event,
prosecutor.
Who testified when he was asked, has any of this, the firing of Comey, has this hindered in any way, impeded in any way?
No.
No, because James Comey, again, is not around sleuthing by himself in dumpsters. We actually have agents who are ongoing and doing this.
Who never stopped just because Comey left.
So 99% of the left's indictment of Trump related to this has been completely refuted.
Mm-hmm.
Comey says, yes, Trump is correct. I told him three times he's not under investigation. He's not under investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no evidence whatsoever of obstruction of justice, which, by the way, requires not only actual impeding of an investigation, but a corrupt mindset. There's none of that. Now, again, I think it's legitimate for people to say it is still wholly inappropriate for a president to be saying that to the FBI director. And you know what? I'm fine with that argument. I don't think he should have said that.
Yeah.
And there should be a political price to be paid for that. He deserves criticism. But again, this isn't supposedly about criticism.
No.
This is about impeachment.
Right. We're going to impeach him over all this stuff.
So,
not even about Russia. Not even about Russia at all in this. About Flynn. That's all they're going to hang your hat on.
So in terms of what they are attempting or what they were hoping that Comey was going to say, it's a complete nothing burger. There is literally nothing there to support their fervent desire to remove Orange Hitler from office. There's nothing.
Not that I can see. Now, I have a slight difference maybe on that. I think it was inappropriate for Trump to ask, if he did ask, to let drop the Flynn thing. I think that's...
Yeah, absolutely.
But Comey says... regardless, it was very concerning given the FBI's role as an independent investigative agency. I think that's wholly incorrect. The FBI is part of the Justice Department, which is under the purview of the Attorney General, which is under the purview of the President.
Right.
So it's not an independent investigative agency.
No, absolutely
agency.
Not. And
so if you think it is, that's a problem.
No, and in fact, the President, and every President does this because Barack Obama did this in spades, can set the investigative priorities for every agency under his purview, which means this gets back to allocation of resources and decisions about what are we going to focus on?
Right.
Are we going to focus on the war on drugs? Are we going to focus on global warming? Are we going to focus on Muslim outreach? Whatever it may be, the executive branch and the president gets to say, within the finite resources that are allocated to this department, I don't get to direct the investigation.
Right.
I don't get to tell you what to do, but I am saying I want a focus on these specific things. So you are absolutely correct. It is not an independent agency in the sense that they're just free agents.
Right. It's not independent counsel
investigating
like Mueller.
Whatever they want.
Yeah, it's not like Robert Mueller with the independent counsel who has free reign to do a lot of things that are under the purview of somebody on the executive branch. The Justice Department is under the executive branch, which is Trump. Whether you like that or not, he is the head of the executive branch, period.
Yes, and you and I both agree it is, let's separate criminality from propriety. What is appropriate? It is not appropriate, in my view and in your view, it sounds for a president to say, I need your loyalty. No, this isn't a mafia family.
Yeah.
And it's not appropriate, in my view, for a president to say, you know, I really would hope that you would, you know, Flynn's a good guy. I think you need to
ease back. And Comey agreed with that. Comey said he's a good guy. I worked with him at DIA. But
so that is not, it's not appropriate. It's also not politically smart, all those other things. But once again, that is not what this debate, this frenzy has been about.
Right.
This is about supposedly the level of high crimes and misdemeanors that is going to remove Trump from office, which is patently absurd.
Yeah, nothing here, in my opinion, reaches that level. Inappropriate, yes. Criminal, no. The loyalty oath, that's a little heavy-handed, but that sounds like Trump exactly. I can see him sitting here
absolutely
saying, loyal, you got to be loyal, you got to be loyal. Honestly loyal. Yeah, whatever. That's great. I'm interested to see what Comey says tomorrow beyond what this statement kind of purports. We'll have to check back on that in a couple weeks and see what comes of that. But
So once again, I mean, because you could actually feel, because they're
CNN's
so,
going crazy. Right, they're salivating.
Every little, another squirrel. Here it is. This is it. All right, it was the dossier. Then it was, it was Kushner Gate. Then it was Sessions Gate. Then maybe we're going to get Carter Page delivering cash to somebody in Gorky Park. No, okay. No, this is it. This is it, Chad. We've got him. Comey.
Finally.
Comey is going to claim that Trump had incriminating photos of his children and made him give the nuclear launch codes to Putin. No, no, he's not going to say what we want him to say.
I think if I were James Comey, when this is all over, I would not want any public service job ever again, because this is just a disaster from beginning to end.
Well, and look, Comey has himself largely to blame for a lot of this, particularly, again, he strikes me as a guy. I've never heard anyone say that he's dishonest.
Great.
But the guy does strike me as a real kind of sanctimonious, almost morally preening sort of dude.
Yep.
You know, and with his whole, I'm gonna investigate, I'm not gonna investigate. When this was dealing with Clinton, I'm gonna announce sort of the findings, and then I'm gonna make a prosecutorial decision that I'm not even entitled to make.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff.
Well, that's why him releasing this the day before, insisting that it be released,
right,
feels the same way. I'm
grandstanding.
I don't see what this accomplishes if you're gonna say it tomorrow, why you needed to release it today. I don't understand what you're, other than I'm superior and you already got the print so you can run the I think the guy just is over his head, was over his head, doesn't understand what he's there to do, and I don't think he should be in that role. I'm glad he isn't. I'm happy he's not.
Well, and again, we talked about the fact that what Trump should have done is fire him immediately. Once again, firing him when he did, even though he was perfectly within his rights to do
looks
that.
Looks worse.
It just makes it look worse.
Now, if Obama had done this, and Obama did worse, but if Obama did this exact situation, would you be saying it's also not appropriate, but not
absolutely
criminal?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean,
and I agree with
there's
that.
Other things that I think Obama has done, actually did, that are far, far worse than had he done exactly what Trump did. And I would have said the same thing. Not appropriate for Barack Obama to be telling his FBI director, I demand loyalty. Impeachment? Removal from office? Come on. I mean, it's crazy.
Just stupid. So our next topic is about Reality Bites. That's a movie from the 90s, but it's also about a young lady. I'm going to play a little clip about this young lady because you may not recognize this. Hold on.
Until now, Reality Winner, her real name, was best known as a fitness enthusiast who posted videos online of her exploits.
CrossFit. Yes!
But now the 25-year-old gym rat faces prosecution under the espionage law for sending top secret documents to an internet website called The Intercept. Her parents in Augusta, Georgia, told WSB reporter Nicole Carr they are distraught.
I've seen so many ugly things out there. But she doesn't deserve that.
Oh, yes, she does.
I just want her to be treated fair.
Their daughter worked in Augusta at a branch of the NSA, the National Security Agency. She was technically employed by a government contractor.
Contractors typically have top secret security clearance, which means they have, in theory, had a full field investigation. But they're not subject to continuous monitoring by the agency.
And that has been a serious problem for America's spy agencies.
And they're referring to Edward Snowden on that as well.
Yes.
So, the woman's name is Reality Winner. That's her real name, Reality Winner. It sounds like she just decided to pull Snowden.
She doesn't like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Apparently, her social network page is all over the place.
Yes.
She's just berating and bashing Trump. She's another deranged Trump hater, which is fine. And she just decided, I'm gonna leak top secret information and hand it over to this website, because that's what you get to do when you're upset.
Yep, you just give it out. Now, she was caught. This is the unique way she was caught, and I don't think people understand this. So every color printer or color copier has a unique watermark code embedded in the print, which you probably can't see, and most times you have to magnify quite a bit. Each one has a time code and a date code of when they were printed. So all the FBI did was go back and look at the time codes and see who was printing at that time and narrowed it down to her. So she got caught because the scanned document she uploaded had this information in it. If she used a black and white instead of color, she'd have been fine. So the ironic part is that.
What needs to happen here is that we basically have a culture right now, particularly a media culture, where people think that they can get away with this stuff with impunity. Mm-hmm. This is going on every day with the leaks about Trump.
Well, causing the question, why are we using contractors for our spy agencies? Why are we not? Because if you work for the NSA, which Snowden did not, and which Reality Winner did not, they were contractors, they are constantly being vetted. They're never not being vetted. The contractors are vetted once, and it stops. Why are we using contractors?
Well, I don't know enough about sort of the internal manpower hiring, whether they need these people or not. But they're under the same obligations. They're well aware. This is a felony-level crime. And what makes this worse is that she intentionally, now most people are intentionally, but this isn't some, with Petraeus, I let this slip to my mistress, or was it for his book?
Yeah.
I don't even remember all the details.
I think it was his mistress.
Right? No, this is someone who's maliciously leaking information. And by the way, I'm not even sure, how do those dots connect? I'm really, really mad about Trump. So I'm going to just release some top secret information.
What was about the Russian hack, supposedly?
Yeah, but it had nothing to do with Trump.
I know. And nothing to do with Trump. And that, it begs the question, what are we doing wrong with these people that are being vetted? I mean, why is this an okay in our culture? Why is it okay or seem to be okay? I mean, Snowden's celebrated by certain groups of people in this country as, he blew the whistle. He's a great man.
That's because, and I'm sorry, you can make the argument that this is, of course, true on both sides of the aisle, but you will see over and over that for the most part, the people that are justifying and doing the leaking are on the political left.
Typically.
Because they believe that the ends justify the means. And
there
since they're fighting Hitler, then anything goes. And since the New York Times is part of the resistance, we can release the name of our asset in Iran, which they just did. And by the way, the best part of that was their justification was, well, since his name had already been made public, who made it public before?
You did.
The New York Times. So since we already kind of leaked his name before,
we're going to keep doing that because the public has a right to know. That was their rationale.
Of course.
The public has a right to know.
So
they do not, but they think they do.
Again, what needs to happen, and this starts with the Department of Justice, is people that are doing this need to be identified, and they need to be aggressively prosecuted. And when a few of these people serve multiple 10-year and 20-year terms, I have a feeling that will have a chilling effect on the next person that wants to call up the Washington Post and say, hey, you know what I saw in this unmasked transcript of this guy's conversation? That's what has to happen.
Yeah, well, if you're working in secret, there's a reason you're working in secret. It's for national security. Now, do I believe everything done in national security under that banner is truly national security? No. I think a lot of things are hidden there so that the public doesn't see them. But I've never been a believer that the press has a right to publish whatever they come across.
Of course they don't.
Simply because, and saying the public has a right to know. The public doesn't have a right to know. During World War II, they didn't have a right to know about troop movements. They didn't have a right
to
know that.
Actually, there's probably 90% of what goes on the public does not have a right to
Correct.
Know.
Correct. Do you ask yourself this, folks. On June 5th, did the New York Times have the right to publish, June 5th, 1944, have the right to publish the impending invasion? Because, you know, it was going to happen anyway.
Right.
So should we just publish it because the people have a right to know what their sons and fathers are getting involved in, sons and brothers and fathers? No, they did not. There's a reason that things are kept secret so that the enemy doesn't know. You don't just share it because you say, well, I've got it, I must share it. Wrong. Edward Snowden is a traitor.
Yeah.
Period.
Absolutely.
He is a traitor. It appears that Reality Winner is also a traitor.
And by the way, we used to shoot these people.
Yeah, they did. They did. So 10 years should be nice compensation.
Well, and it'll be more than that. I mean, I don't actually know how they would be charged because I have a feeling under the federal statute, it's every violation. So you can tack that on. And again, until that starts to happen, these people are going to continue to do this because why wouldn't they?
Well, you have to ask yourself, if Edward Snowden thought he was in the right, why did he flee? Why did you flee the country and give it to The Guardian because you thought you were doing the right thing?
Sure.
Well, obviously you thought you might have been doing the right thing, but you also thought, I better not do this because I'm going to be imprisoned. So obviously.
Well, and again, what consequences, right?
Yeah.
Martin Luther King, you can stand up for your principles, recognizing that when you do these things, there are legal consequences. So if you're really convinced that you're doing the right thing, then you go ahead and do that, and you take your medicine.
Yep.
No, they want it both ways. Sure. They don't want to have to pay any penalty for doing this.
I did it because it was the right thing, and you should protect me because I did the right thing, and you needed to know. Granted, did I assume the government was spying on us? Yeah. Did I have specifics before Snowden? No, but it didn't really matter. I assumed they were. Because they could. And do I believe the government could read every email that I send? Yes, I do. I believe they can. And you can't prove to me otherwise that they can't, because I think they can read everything that's going across the internet. But doesn't mean they're reading mine specifically. It just means they could. Get used to that, folks. If you don't want to put it in an email, don't put it in an email. If you don't want to talk about it on the phone, don't talk about it on the phone. Sorry. That's the world we live in, whether you like it or not.
And this is one of the reasons why I have said from the beginning that if Robert Mueller does an honest and thoroughgoing investigation, what is really going to become the focus, I believe, are the people like Susan Rice and the members of the Obama administration and the members of the intelligence community who have been engaging in these constant leaks of information. They are using the intelligence apparatus of this country as a political cudgel to go after their adversaries. I mean,
do you think that's actually going to happen? You think Mueller's going to go that direction?
I don't know. I have my doubts. Of course, I have my doubts as well. But that is the boomerang effect here. The Russia collusion thing is simply a fable. And people say, how can you know that? The investigation is ongoing. Again, it's been ongoing for over a year. There is nothing there, and if there was something there, all of these people who are rabidly attempting to destroy Trump, they've leaked everything else. You think they're not going to leak the best? What are they holding it back for?
Agreed. We've talked about that for weeks.
So there is nothing whatsoever to this.
No.
But what I think there is, where there's smoke, you know, there's a conflagration. And they just sent subpoenas the other day. We talked about this to Samantha Power, who was apparently Samantha Power, ambassador to the UN. Why is Samantha requesting unmasking?
Not a reason I can think of.
I can't think of a legitimate reason for that.
None.
So the investigation, I believe, if it is done the way it should be, which means all avenues are open, we will investigate every single possible crime. There's going to be a lot of people within the Obama administration. They're going to be squirming and should be.
And
squirming.
Should be.
Yes,
exactly.
Absolutely.
And should be. So we'll pick that up when we find out more about Reality Winner and whatever might happen to her. Hopefully the full extent of the law will be pushed on her. I have to play this clip, and it's about a minute long from Nancy Pelosi. And I don't know if I can
endure a minute of Nancy Pelosi.
You have to.
Why would you subject our listeners to a minute of Nancy Pelosi?
There's a lot of rambling. There's a lot of stupid stuff. And at the end, it's almost like her brain disengages.
So at the end?
At the end. I mean, so it's
Did
a minute.
It start engaged?
Probably not.
Okay.
So let me play this.
When the Pope went to the White House, he talked about the dangers of air pollution. When he was here.
Yeah.
And just last week, the Pope met with President Trump and gave him a copy of his encyclical, Laudato Si.
Encyclical, whatever that means.
Which made the case for strong, urgent action to halt the climate crisis. The Pope wrote, "The climate is a common good belonging
don't
to
comment?
All and meant for all." The Bible tells us that to minister to the needs of God's creation is an act of worship. To ignore those needs is to dishonor the God who made us. And that is just what we're doing by walking away from this accord.
Climate change.
The question I have for Donald Trump, as a mother and a grandmother of five and a grandmother of nine, how is he ever going to explain to his grandchildren what he did?
How can you
to
tell
the
children?
Breathe, assuming they breathe air.
Oh, assuming they breathe air.
And I have to assume that that is the case. We all do.
Assuming they breathe air, and I assume they do because we all do. Really?
Maybe they won't be breathing air.
She tells the future.
Maybe.
I don't know, folks. Maybe she has gills and she uses water. I don't know. It was a rambling mess that she mispronounced everything she could possibly mispronounce.
The Bible says that we must be part of the Paris Accord.
Oh, yes.
The Bible says, Jesus says, we must agree with progressive taxation. It's amazing all the things that Jesus demands as it relates to the progressive political project, except, of course, for
abortion,
which at that point the Pope needs to shut up.
Yeah.
No, we don't want to hear about that. Again, I've said the best part about the whole appeal to the Pope is that in the area where he actually has arguable authority, they don't want to hear anything that he has to say about sexuality, about abort, right? But, well, he does think that the earth is dying.
Yes.
So you should live. And, you know, he does know a lot about leftist economic theory because he's from Argentina.
Yes, exactly.
So maybe we should do the Venezuela model because the Pope likes Venezuela.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's amazing to me that she's citing the Pope like that somehow we care what the Pope thinks about the environment.
And by the way, the other best part of this, Nancy, are you going full theocrat here? I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine if someone like Paul Ryan had come out and said, well, I've based my entire energy policy on what the Pope says. Oh, my word. The ACLU would be filing lawsuits next day.
You know, I felt like she had a stroke there at the end, or TIA at least, because the air they breathe, and I assume they all breathe air.
They've breached the Nancy has breached the wall of separation.
Oh, I just had to play it because it was so Nancy. It's retire, just retire. You're better off retiring.
You're in our grandchildren, Chad, because we have withdrawn from the Paris Accords. We'll be wandering in the blasted lands
without air.
Well, right.
They won't be able to breathe air.
They'll be breathing some sort of, smog, acid rain, sludge.
I don't know what they'll be breathing, but apparently will not be air. That was just an aside. I just had to play
that. That was excellent.
So it's a minute. You never get back, but still. So our last topic this evening revolves around sports. We said we'd talk about sports at the end.
And I have a separate sports topic because I'm now on my – but we'll do yours first.
Okay, we'll do mine first. So Colin Kaepernick cannot find a team. John Mara came out for the New York Giants and said he got a lot of letters. Don't sign that guy. He protested. He went to the only team that's leftist enough other than the 49ers to have signed him, which was the Seahawks, and they didn't sign him. They signed a guy who's had 13 starts in the NFL and has done practically nothing. My question to you, and I already know the answer, but my question is, does his protesting matter for his signing? Are these two separate issues? And I want to take out the race thing because I think
you're asking me as a factual question, does it matter or should it matter?
Well, he hasn't been signed by any team. Okay. So we have to assume a couple things. One, that the protesting last year had an effect on certain teams, that they are not willing to take on that juggernaut of stupidity. The second thing is he may be asking for more money than they're willing to pay for backup. Because he's not a starter. He showed that when he couldn't start in San Francisco. And third, it's not about his color. I don't think his race has anything to do with this whatsoever. There are black quarterbacks in this league. It is not about the color of his skin. I think it's one thing and one thing only. He's not that good.
Correctamundo. Well, there's two things. But at bottom, you are right. The NFL is entirely about bottom line performance. Mm-hmm. If Aaron Rodgers had done what Colin Kaepernick did, Aaron Rodgers would still be the starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers.
Exactly.
If Tom Brady had declared his allegiance to ISIS, he would still be the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots.
I'm not sure he hasn't.
It's worse. He's declared his allegiance to Trump. It's even worse.
To some people, that's
right,
true.
The man that just destroyed the earth. Colin Kaepernick is no longer a good quarterback.
Yes. I don't know if he ever was a good quarterback,
decent. He had those few years under Harbaugh with the Niners.
Yes.
I mean, he's obviously a talented guy. But no, he's gone downhill to the point where, you know, he's barely a serviceable backup. But, so you take that, he has no real demand for his skills, and you add in the politically toxic baloney. Of course nobody wants to deal with this guy. Why would you? Because it is a business.
Yep.
So the business thrives when you put good players on the field, but you also don't want to alienate the people that are buying your box seats and paying every week to come to your games. And Colin Kaepernick has alienated a whole bunch of people with his idiotic protest, you know, about the American flag somehow, as if the government is somehow in favor of cops killing black. His entire protest was incoherent from the beginning.
I'm not even sure what it
so
was.
So those two things perfectly explain, and legitimately so, why he can't find an employer. The idea that it's racist is laughable, but of course everything is racist.
Well, you talk to a black man, it's racist. They won't hire the black man. I'm like, but there's a lot of black
quarterbacks. They won't hire the lousy,
sure,
awful for your bottom line black man. Correct.
Yes. If he was white, they still wouldn't
hire
him.
They still would not.
It would have nothing to do with it.
The perfect, even though it's completely 180 degrees different, is Tim Tebow is exactly the flip side of this coin, which is teams apparently decided Tim Tebow, not a starting quarterback, and we don't want the baggage that he brings in a completely different way, because we're just all of the paparazzi and the media and his weird, you know, Christian fans. It's exactly the same dynamic. Did you hear anyone saying within the media how unfair it was Tim Tebow? And by the way, I can make a far more persuasive argument that Tim Tebow, when you consider all of the upside in terms of now, talent-wise, honestly, Colin Kaepernick right now is a pretty good comparison.
On paper, he looks like a better quarterback.
I mean, maybe, but I mean, in terms of, he's not accurate either.
No.
He's an athletic running quarterback. So these guys are actually right now pretty close in their skill set.
Sure.
Maybe you could argue Kaepernick's a slightly better passer, but I actually think Tebow's a better winner. Mm-hmm. In any event, you don't hear anyone in the media lamenting the fact that poor Tim Tebow couldn't find, they couldn't wait to remove him from football because he was an embarrassment. It is exactly the same dynamic with Colin Kaepernick. Your skills are not in demand, and you are a huge headache, and you're basically bad for business. Tebow's not bad for business, but they didn't want to deal with the circus.
Right.
That's it.
Well, some of his former teammates have said this is a league that accepts second chances for wife beaters and child abusers.
Who are good players.
And I think that's the key. Now, they bring up Greg Hardy, who was signed by the Cowboys after
who's also
not in the league and still could play, but he's not in the league right now.
The only reason he
was black too, folks.
Greg Hardy, perfect example. Cretin, terrible guy. Domestic abuser. He's got guns all over his bed. I mean, the guy is a complete screwball.
Yeah.
Anger management issues all day long, but he can sack the quarterback.
Yep. Yep. I think I use Terrell Owens as an example. Terrible Owens, as I call him. He was on teams, even though he had a lot of off-the-field issues and a lot of teammate issues, while he could play. Yep. When he stopped being valuable as a player, they stopped dealing with his crap. They'll deal with your crap longer if it's not detrimental to the team. If you're a good player, you'll get to play maybe a little longer based on your talent and some loyalty. You know, Tom Brady, he's getting a lot of the loyalty thing from the Patriots, but at some point his skills are going to diminish. They're going to. Are they going to keep him around? Probably not, but that's how the NFL works. But they're keeping him around longer than maybe he should have. A 40-year-old quarterback doesn't get an extension, typically. Yeah.
And the other thing that is so rich about this is, again, you have this monolithic left-wing sports media lamenting the demise of Colin Kaepernick and how unfair it is, and yet they champion anyone who they target who is not towing progressive orthodoxy of being drummed out of their job, of having their career ruined. Brendan Eich comes to mind. Yep. You can go down the list. And now all of a sudden it's about second chances. They're not interested in second chances.
Nope. Not
they
for
simply
anybody but
don't
themselves.
Like the fact that a black man who they immediately find solidarity with because of his pigment can't get a second chance, but they wouldn't look twice at anyone. What if you did a pro? What if you're wearing the Confederate flag on the sideline? They'd want that guy driven to Siberia, right?
Yep.
But now all of a sudden it's about perspective and it's just totally unfair. No, we're actually, your rules are being applied. The marketplace has spoken, your skill set is not wanted, and you have created a backlash such that your owners find it worse to have you on the team because you're a drain on popularity, on profitability. End of story. Goodbye, Colin.
Now, here's a little aside, which most people don't remember. He opted out of his last year in San Francisco. He could be on a team right now drawing multi-millions of dollars, but he opted out to test the free agent market. Not bright. Not the best move you could have made, Colin. Not yeah. real.
Well,
big.
And you know what? A cynical person, and I don't know any of those people. A cynical person might also point out that it was curious the timing of his decision to become the modern day Muhammad Ali when his skills had diminished. The hypothetical cynical person might say he was trying to give himself some job security by wagering that, well, they wouldn't dare jettison me now that I am the leader of some sort of incoherent movement, would they? Yes, they would.
Yes, they would. Apparently, he gave him perfect opportunity.
And you know why? Because you didn't really have enough people that supported you.
No, nor did you. Now, you said you had a sports topic you wanted to talk about.
Very quickly, because we're going to continue, since it's NBA Finals week, we're going to continue with our theme. We're not going to talk specifically about Jordan. Okay. However, the other argument that I heard today and that I want to address is now the hypothetical matchup between the juggernaut, the unstoppable, the greatest team in recorded history, the Golden State Warriors, who currently are undefeated in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They are 14-0. Mm-hmm. If they sweep the Cavaliers, they will be the first team in NBA history to go 16-0 in the playoffs. And everyone has decided, of course, that that means that they are unapproachable. They are the greatest ever because, again, everything now is better than then. Now, no dispute, the Golden State Warriors are a historically phenomenal team. They have to be in the conversation, particularly if they sweep the Cavaliers, of one of the best teams of all time. But the hypothetical has been, would the Golden State Warriors beat Jordan's 72-win Bulls from the, I think it's 96 season? And most of what I heard is not only that would the Warriors win, it would be a complete mismatch.
Which, this Warriors team this year or last year?
This year. This year with this Durant. Okay. With Durant. Okay. So, my perspective, first of all, there's a couple things. It matters what the rules are.
I was going to say that. It matters very much what the rules were.
The rule, now, here's the thing. I think the Bulls win that series in either era, but I think if it's today's rules, it's a seven-game series. If they play under the thug ball rules that they played back when Jordan, when Jordan was in the league, the Bulls win in five. Now, you may say, well, it's possible. That's Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green. How could they possibly deal with them? It's very simple. If you were designing a team in a laboratory that was going to defeat the Golden State Warriors, you would design the Bulls. What do I mean? You have Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, arguably the two best perimeter defenders in NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
You have Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, okay? Those two guys are now going to cover Curry and Durant. Are they going to stop them? Of course. Nobody can stop an offensive player that good. However, you can't pick two better defensive players in history to guard those two guys.
Agreed.
You now have Draymond Green, the agitator, the fake tough guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to be guarding Draymond Green?
Sounds like Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman would punk Draymond Green within the first minute of the game.
Yeah.
Now, you may say, oh, Draymond's a better all-around player. Yeah, he is, because Dennis Rodman didn't care about offense.
No offense,
but Dennis Rodman was the best.
Well, hold on. Dennis Rodman in Detroit had offense.
He did.
He didn't have offense in Chicago because he didn't need to.
They didn't need it. And so he's never been a good shooter, but his whole point would be to drive Draymond Green to distraction.
Which he would.
To grab every rebound that he could, which he would. And to defend like a demon, which he would. So you have those three guys, Rodman, Jordan, and Pippen, lined up against Curry, Durant, and Green. I take the Bulls all day long. And by the way, the X factor, of course, which you haven't even talked about. Now you say, oh, well, what about Klay Thompson? Klay Thompson.
Tony Kukoc.
Well, no. Ron Harper would guard Klay Thompson. Yeah. Klay Thompson is a much better all-around player than Ron Harper at that stage of his career. However, they don't need Ron Harper to score either. They need Ron Harper to prevent Klay Thompson from going on one of his torrid three-point shooting streaks. And, you know, like he did against Oklahoma City last year when he had 11 threes.
Mm-hmm.
Klay Thompson's a great player. Ron Harper will prevent him from at least going bonkers. That's all they need.
I agree with that.
The other thing that they apparently forget about when they talk about, well, this is the modern era. Michael Jordan, when he was 39 and 40 years old, gimping around an old man for the Washington Wizards with no hops, nothing, averaged over 20 points a game, basically shooting mid-range jump shots.
Right.
You put healthy Michael Jordan in this era, with these rules, he scores 45 points a game. They can't stop him. any team that has Michael Jordan and a cast that was surrounding him has to be favored to win. The Bulls, if they're allowed to hand check and hard foul, they win in five because the Warriors have no idea how to deal with that. Maybe four. In this era, it probably goes seven because the Warriors are going to have more freedom to play that sort of three-point shooting free-for-all, but the Bulls still win. And this idea that the Warriors are going to somehow dominate them is lunacy.
Son, I give you two wrinkles. One, Steve Kerr was a great three-point shooter for the Bulls in 96.
Absolutely.
But if Steve Kerr's coaching the Warriors, he's going to foul his 96 version, so he's out of the
game.
That's
true.
So
well,
he's got some inside knowledge.
Doesn't that also cause a rift in the space-time?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works exactly, but you can't
Back
see each other.
Back to the Future
other.
Said you
he'd
can't.
Have to he'd have to have Mike Brown coach the games because he couldn't see himself. But, you know, Steve Kerr was a good three-point shooter. They had three-point shooters.
Well, guess who else was a good three-point shooter and who would be perfect? You mentioned his name.
Kukoc.
Tony Kukoc. Yeah. He's a 6'11 guy who can dribble, handle the ball. This era, Tony Kukoc was in the wrong era.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he was third in minutes for that Bulls championship team, and I think he averaged probably somewhere around 13 points per game.
Yeah, he didn't have a great
Well, that's because they didn't need to. He would be a matchup nightmare in this era. He can shoot the three. He can penetrate. Who's going to guard him?
Well, nobody. That's the problem. They don't have anybody left to guard him if you got Jordan Pippen.
I mean, you can put Iguodala on him. Nah. Okay, but at this Andre Iguodala, not 5 years ago, he's going to have a lot of trouble with Tony Kukoc.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think you're right. I think I don't even know if it goes seven in this era. I think the Bulls would need some time to adapt to this era's rules. So if you gave them the entire playoff run,
exactly,
definitely it's no question in my mind. I don't know how anybody can sit there with a straight face and say that these Golden State Warriors match up favorably with the 96 Bulls. I don't know how you say that.
Because the Bulls have never seen a team like the Golden State Warriors.
That's true, because none of those teams existed in 1996.
And the Golden State Warriors have never seen two defensive players like Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan.
That doesn't exist
today.
Now,
you may say, LeBron James, great defensive player. Yes, he is. He's one guy, and you know what? He's not as good as Scottie Pippen. Not even close.
I agree.
Now, he might be the best come from behind, run down a layup and block it guy.
Sure, sure.
And LeBron James is a legitimately great defensive player, but he's not as good as Scottie Pippen. And he's not as good on ball, on the perimeter, as Michael Jordan. He's just not.
So what do you think, how the Cavs match up now versus 96? How do you think that matches up?
This Cavs team? Oh, my word.
Last year's Cavs team.
Against the Bulls? Oh,
Not close,
for the Cavs. Not good for the Cavs.
I don't think the Cavs have the talent. And there was some talk about the Cavs being the underdogs in this series. And somebody said, well, the Cavs are defending champions. That was last year's team. That's not this year's team. Don't care. It's this year's team. You can't base hypothetical betting
on last year's
team.
You know what the big problem for
this
year's Cavs team is? Their defense
is non-existent.
Their defensive intensity has completely disappeared.
Any.
Now, and the problem is, here's why. Of their big three, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James. LeBron James is a great defensive player, but he can't do everything. Kevin Love is a mediocre, at best, defensive player, particularly if he has to guard the perimeter.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving is a terrible defensive player. So the only way that the Cavs can win, and the reason they won against the Warriors last year, was number one, LeBron had a historically great performance. Number two, Draymond Green, because he's a lunkhead, got himself thrown out of game six. And number three is they controlled the tempo much better. And of course, the Warriors have Durant.
Sure.
So they have no ability. They could deal with Curry, Thompson, Green. Okay.
Right.
They don't have a guy now to deal with Kevin Durant, because now you have to use LeBron on Durant.
Yep.
Who's guarding Steph Curry? Kyrie Irving can't do that. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Their defense cannot adapt to a Warriors team that now has a 6'10 three-point shooter offensive dynamo. Kevin Durant's the best offensive player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not minimizing the fact that he adds a tremendous extra layer of difficulty to their team. That's why they're 14-0 in the playoffs. That's why I say if you're going to design a team to deal with them, you design the Bulls.
I agree. I completely agree with what you're saying. And currently the Warriors are leading in game three by two.
Not a surprise. I actually think the Cavs are going to win tonight. I think the Cavs lose the series in five, but I think they're going to win tonight.
Well, they're at home. They should. It's the best place to do it. I think you're completely right. I think the Bulls demolish either team in enough given enough time. And I think the matchups don't favor them. And on paper, at least, it doesn't seem like it would work for either team. But that's why they play the games.
This is the latest in my series of old man rants.
I think the problem a lot of people have is they look at the teams today and say, yes, they've never faced a team like the Bulls because no team exists like that today. There are no defensive teams like that because the rules were different.
Right, exactly.
You create a team, just like in football, you create a team to beat what's currently available in front of you, not what was available 20 years ago. And that's what they've done. The Bulls would have been constructed differently if they had to play in today's era, to a point. But
like you said, they would have used their role players in particular to shoot more threes, and sure, they would have run up and down the floor. By the way, do you think Jordan and Pippen would like running up and down the floor?
No.
No, they actually would.
Well, they like doing it, but I don't know that they'd have to.
But, right, they wouldn't have to. And again, the other thing that it amazes me is, and I hear this all the time, the athletes in this era. Listen, again, these people, they apparently think this was like during the George Mikan era, right?
Yes,
when
exactly.
You had these plodding Stegosaurus guys, you know, with their knee braces on, like lurch, you know, patrolling the lane. I can go down a laundry list of people in their prime. Dominique Wilkins, Sean Kemp, Kenny Skywalker, Larry Nance. These guys, the idea that they couldn't somehow play
Kenny
in this
Smith.
Era.
Sorry.
I mean, you go Charles Barkley in his prime.
Yeah.
All these guys, David Robinson, Akeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
Are these guys aren't athletically up to snuff. They
no,
couldn't compete now.
No. Shaq.
Right.
I mean,
and even when Jordan was an old man with the Wizards playing against these superior athletes, he was scoring 20-some points per game,
yeah,
and he was a shell of himself.
Yeah.
Better athlete, by the way. I will accept the argument that there are more better athletes, but you know what? That doesn't make you a better player.
No.
And in fact, I can make a very, very compelling argument that in terms of the defense that's played, part of it's the rules,
mm-hmm,
because the rules were specifically changed to goose offense. How do you goose offense? You don't let defenders touch perimeter players, mm-hmm, and you don't let people foul you in any aggressive way on your way to the basket. Guess what? That allows freewheeling, scoring. People don't have to be worried about, mm-hmm, getting knocked, smashed to the floor when they go to the rim. Nobody, you know, you watch this series, the first game, Kevin Durant, shooters are spreading out to the three-point line. He's waltzing down the middle for dunks.
Yeah.
That simply didn't happen.
No.
With
no.
any level of consistency back during the era when Jordan
Don't even
went.
Say the Bulls. Say no. The Knicks would not let that happen.
It's not even that they don't let it happen. The game would not even allow
no.
that. And you knew that if you were going there, you're gonna get WWF'd. You're gonna get from the top rope
Ask
smashed
Reggie
to
Miller.
The floor.
Ask
of
Reggie
course.
Miller. He was a skinny little guy who shot a lot of perimeter shots, but still got hit a lot. That was the era. That was the time they did. Now, in the 80s, there was not a lot of defense played in the 80s, if you remember
no.
the scores. 130 plus sometimes. That was the freewheeling era, and it kind of calmed down a little bit in the 90s when they got more defensive.
Yeah.
So it came back. I don't know. I think it's Mikan. You brought Mikan up. Really?
Yeah, again, I really think that the people like Tom Haberstroh apparently think that Bob Cousy was running around, because there is a legitimate point that, yes, at a certain era, the game changed. In the 60s and the 70s, yeah, you didn't have
no.
the kind of athletes that you eventually saw.
No.
But the idea that we've somehow evolved to the point where the guys in Michael Jordan's era couldn't compete is just sheer ignorance.
Well, I look at that as the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird era forward. That's the modern era, in my opinion.
Yes.
So when you look at the modern era, yeah, is it different from 1980 to today? Yes, it's different. The teams were different. They're much more physically specimens now than they were in 1980. But there's a lot of talent in those teams. And head-to-head in their primes, I think you'd see a lot of similarities. Those teams would still be on the... Dr. J...
Right.
Moses Malone?
Well, and of course, Dr.
Seriously?
J, when he hit the NBA, I mean, he was slightly athletically diminished. His, you
yeah.
know, his glory days. But, you know, he still has one of the most iconic dunks in history.
No, no kidding.
Over Michael Cooper at the Spectrum, the Rockabye dunk.
Yeah.
He's also got the famous behind-the-backboard layup. That was Dr. J in the NBA.
Yeah.
But, you know, he couldn't compete athletically today
please.
With...
Please.
You know, I mean, just stop it.
You do what the era allows you to do, and if you can't, you do something else. I mean... These teams could adapt to that. Maybe not. I doubt it. I don't think you can get more physical. You're either physical or you're not, but you can get less physical and more finesse if you need to be.
Yeah, actually, I'm far more open to the argument that the Magic Kareem Lakers could beat in a seven-game series the Bulls. I don't think they would, but they could, than the current Warriors.
Well, you could be Skyhook was tough to defend.
Magic, Worthy, Byron Scott, Kareem, even though it's later in his career, he was still very effective. Mm-hmm. That team could run up and down the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They had, I think they had, at one point, Bob McAdoo coming off the bench. I think that
Kurt Rambis. Don't forget Kurt Rambis.
Kurt Rambis. Yeah, clothesline, Kevin McHale. See, Kevin McHale, if he had done that in this era, would be sent to basketball jail for 2 years. So, again, I am far more willing to accept an argument that that Lakers team could have competed with the Bulls and beaten the Bulls, and I am the current Golden State Warriors team. Just not
bothered. I would agree with that. Kareem was unstoppable when he got rolling. Towards the end, it was a little easier.
And the Bulls have nobody to deal with that. Now, nobody had anyone to deal with Kareem, but again, the centers, it's Luke Long. The centers don't matter.
Nope.
Who do the Warriors have? Zaza Pachulia? The centers
who
are irrelevant.
Take? Zaza Pachulia or Luke Longley?
Luke Longley.
I'm not sure.
Luke was the man.
I'd take Bill Cartwright.
No, you can't take him. Actually, Bill, despite how goofy he looked, was actually a pretty effective guy.
He's a fair defender.
Even though he was one of those guys like you meet at the gym when you're playing pickup and he's always injuring people because he's like elbowing them in the face, kind of stumbling around. He's a very gentle guy. Oh, I'm sorry, I broke your nose.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
And he had that goofy...
That beard, it couldn't grow right.
The little, salt and pepper
patch. Yeah, it was
patch.
Just on the corner. It was weird. It was just weird to look at. He looked much older than he was probably all the time. He just looked old.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
All right, so there you go. That's our sports digression again.
This is a continuing series of annoyances for Tony. So
well, and our good friend, and he is our good friend, who vehemently disagrees with our take on LeBron and the Bulls, basically said to me that it's just too frustrating for him to sort of engage on this because he thinks I'm being unfair.
Are you supposed to be fair when you have an opinion? He's not fair when he has his opinions.
Well, again, I think he's wrong and I think I'm right and vice versa.
Yeah, that's
so
fine.
Isn't that the nature of sports debate?
It seems to be. You're supposed to have disagreements and it's okay that he's wrong and we're right. Sorry. And if you're listening, you know who you are. We won't say your name to embarrass you, but you know who you are, and we're sorry that you're wrong.
Well, no, because we had a very kind of fun exchange back and forth on this, and he has his views. The one thing, though, I should say is that I find it curious that this kind of discussion is treated as, well, you're demeaning... you're demeaning the Warriors. You're demeaning LeBron. No, I've just said, let me make it clear. The Warriors are among the greatest teams in NBA history. There's no dispute about that. They've won 67-plus games in three consecutive years. If they win, it's going to be their second championship in 3 years against a Pantheon-level player in LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
That puts them in the conversation. I'm just saying that if you're going to put them up against the Bulls, they're going to lose.
Yeah. LeBron goes 3-5 in finals. Is he... even considered one of the greatest players of all time?
Oh, don't say that. Our friend's head's going to explode. No, listen. I fully accept the fact that LeBron is playing great in this series.
Mm-hmm.
He had a triple-double in game 2. He's playing tremendous. There's, as Donald Trump would say, tremendous. Tremendously well. is this a blot on his record? I don't think so. Although, as I said, if they get swept... I think that's a problem. Now that people are saying, oh, they're just not good enough. I'm sorry. Once again, you're the best player in the league. You are playing with two other all-stars. I know the Warriors are really good. I think you need to find a way to be competitive. I'm sorry.
Well,
that doesn't mean you need to win the series. If you get swept, I'm going to hold that against you a little bit. Sorry.
Can you be the greatest of all time and not have the most championships?
Yes, you can. Because guess what? Michael Jordan doesn't have the most championships.
Agreed. Bill Russell does.
Bill Russell. And some people will still say that Bill Russell's the greatest of all time because he has 11 rings.
And they are wrong.
They are wrong, but that's fine. No, absolutely you can.
Bill Russell's a good player, but he wasn't the greatest of all
time. Jordan is not the greatest simply because he has 6 championships.
Mm-hmm.
It's because he was the best offensive-defensive player combination in history and the most ruthless competitor and the best athlete.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a combination like that we will see again. LeBron James... transcendent athlete, great competitor, but not at Jordan's level. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, on his resume, there's just certain things that are problems that, don't exist on Jordan's resume.
That's fair.
So you get to be number two. Maybe when you retire, you're number two. That's what I said from the beginning. If that's a slight to LeBron James, oh well.
Can we say that LeBron James is the best of his era?
Absolutely. Meaning I don't think it's close.
His rookie season two, whenever he retires,
I don't even think he's the best of his era. Because of his all-around game. See, that's the other thing people always forget. Even when they talk about Steph Curry, Steph Curry, tremendous offensive player, probably the best deep jump shooter in NBA history. He is a mediocre, at best, defensive player. So it's sort of like we just ignore that. No, no. Kawhi Leonard is a better player than Steph Curry. Now, they play different positions. Kawhi's a forward. But in terms of all-around ability, Kawhi Leonard is not as good of an offensive player, but he is one of the best, if not the best, defensive players in the league. That matters.
Should.
That's the reason that LeBron James is so good, because he does everything well. Great defender, great offensive player, great passer. So absolutely, he's the best player of his era. And again, I don't even really think it's close for second. Who's second? Kobe?
Probably. I mean, I don't know who else it would be from a second. And then Kobe at one time was considered the best of his era.
Well,
maybe
I mean,
his prime
eras,
era.
I mean, again,
they overlap.
These eras become they're sort of gray because it's like a Venn diagram. It's like, where do they overlap?
They overlap a bit. And I'd say Kobe was probably the best of his era that overlaps with LeBron's era.
Are you including Shaq?
No.
Because?
I don't feel like Shaq could dominate, but Shaq had deficiencies.
Oh, sure.
That I think drop him below what Kobe could do. And not because he was a center, just shifted.
Here's the question. Who do you think was more important to the Lakers' three championships that they had together? Kobe or Shaq?
The first year, Shaq. I think Kobe came into his own during the second and into the third.
See, Kobe certainly came into his own. My argument would be that Shaq and those Laker teams could have won those three championships with, let's say, an all-star level shooting guard that's not Kobe.
Sure.
Kobe cannot win three championships with a replacement level or even an all-star level center. That's how dominant Shaq was. And I agree with you.
Yeah.
Shaq had all kinds of holes, but it didn't really matter.
And at the time he was playing, when he was dominant, yes, his abilities fit that era correctly. Today he would be out of his depth, I think, completely out of his depth. He was the end
of Shaq?
In today's league?
Well, it's a different style of play.
That's what I mean. The style of play today.
But you got to remember,
would not allow Shaq to be at his best.
You got to remember though, during the first three titles, not when Shaq got kind of fat and happy and was doing all his Shazam movies and rapper this and whatever. He could run up and down the floor.
He could, but he was never a great perimeter defender.
Oh no,
because he didn't have to be.
No, he just of course
he stood
not.
In the center because that's what he did. So in today, going against Golden State Warriors, who would he stop?
He would stop Zaza.
Who cares? That's what I'm saying. So in today's era, he would not be the great matchup.
Yeah, but just think about this though. How do the Golden State Warriors deal with Shaq?
Hack a Shaq.
I don't know about that. I mean,
you got six other guys on the bench, just start hacking away.
It would be interesting. I mean, it would be a question of, you know, the contrasting styles would be fascinating. One of the reasons I say that LeBron is better than Kobe is because Kobe was always essentially, even though, again, a top 12 player historically, he was always the second most important guy on those Lakers teams. Mm. He might have been a better player all around, but he still wasn't the most important guy on those teams. LeBron has been the alpha dog on every team he's been on.
Agreed.
And he has dragged mediocre teams to the finals.
Mm-hmm. He's dragged good teams to the finals, too.
Yeah, sure he has. I mean, the Miami Heat were a really, really good team. That's why he went there.
Right.
These current Cavaliers are, they're a really, really good team dominating a terrible conference.
Right.
But he's got talent around him now.
I have to think about the Shaq thing, because I don't know if I completely agree with that. But I can see your point. Who best center?
Who's the best center ever? Oh, that's interesting.
No, it isn't. It's easy.
I mean, you'd almost have to say Kareem.
You have to say Kareem.
Yeah. I mean, what is he, six-time MVP?
Yeah. Most points.
Yeah, it's
come on.
Now people say it's Wilt, you know, 100 points, 50 points per game average.
I think Wilt was better than Russell. I think he was on teams that weren't as good.
Wilt was more talented than Russell.
I think Wilt had other sideline projects that kept him otherwise occupied.
What would those have been?
I don't want to
Scrimshaw?
Speak on this. Yeah, Scrimshaw.
Yeah.
I think Russell was more focused, but I think Wilt was a better talent.
But, you know, it's a very interesting question because if you go by talent, look at a guy like Hakeem Olajuwon. I mean, you've never seen a center like that guy before. I mean, he had
I think
moves.
Ramadan hurt him.
Well, I mean, you look what he did to David Robinson in the playoff, yeah. And David Robinson, a great Hall of Fame player.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen a center with the dream shake.
I know.
His athletic ability was off the charts.
It was.
There's been a lot of great centers in historically, but I think you're right. I think when you talk about longevity, you talk about titles, you talk about just sheer stats, Kareem has to be number one.
I think Shaq was more dominating. In the paint.
He had a more dominating peak, but he couldn't do all the things that Kareem
did. No, he had a lot more holes. I mean, again, the sky hook. Go back and watch it, folks. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch it on YouTube or on ESPN Classic. It was unstoppable.
Right. Ignore the goofy goggles.
Yeah, the goggles, the short shorts, the gangliness.
It didn't really look very good, but...
No, it looked hideous, but man, you couldn't stop it. There was no... It was so high, nobody could stop it.
No, it's just a question of whether it's make or miss.
Yeah, and when he was on... It didn't matter. That's the Lakers were great in the 80s because of Kareem and Magic passing.
And Worthy and Cooper.
Right.
And
right.
Norm Nixon.
Right.
And Byron Scott.
But I think you take Kareem out of those teams and they are not championship teams, unfortunately. Good.
Wow, that was a long basketball digression.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew we knew so much about basketball? Our better friend doesn't believe we know that much about basketball. I'll end it there.
He knows what we know is all wrong. That's what he thinks.
It's okay, sir. You can have your opinion. Your opinion is wrong, but it's okay to have it. That's fine. That's what this country's all about. You can have an opinion. It doesn't.
Well,
have to
the rumor is it that that his cohort agrees with us. So,
ooh, is that a rumor or is that a fact?
I don't know. That was my understanding. So,
hey, just saying, you got a friend over here. If you ever want. All right. Thank you, folks. We will not be on next week. I will be out of town, and Tony doesn't know how to turn on
I don't
on
know
the
how
equipment.
To work any of the fancy, bright, blinking light equipment.
No. So we will be back in 2 weeks, hopefully, with a new episode. And enjoy
well,
the
time. How could it not be a new episode?
Well, hopefully we'll be back together.
We'll be back. Yeah, that'll be good.
When we record next, it will be a new episode. We're hoping it's in 2 weeks.
All right. Maybe we'll do something outside the box.
Let's hope. Let's hope.
Unless Trump is impeached, and then we'll have lots to talk about.
You know, we have to talk about that. So I'm Chad.
I'm Tony.
Good night.
This has been a Hannah Tree production.